In studio is Lynn Apkar. He's been at LSU almost 2 years. He's the Wendell Gray Switzer Jr. Endowed Chair in Media Literacy. Has had a long career in journalism, many of those years at the New York Times, also worked with the Wall Street Journal. Last post at the Times, the newspaper of a record in America, was page one editor. So he has done much in his long and storied career, and Lynn is an authority on fake news. And a few years ago, this term wasn't even in existence, but Lynn Apkar, it sure is now. People are really buzzing about so-called fake news. How much of a factor is it in the texture of journalism right now as we know it?
Well, it's a big factor, and we probably ought to define it because it has changed just in the last few months, particularly with the Trump presidency, as to what exactly is fake news. He has appropriated it as a label to criticize stories he doesn't like or media he doesn't like. If he doesn't like a story on CNN, he's called CNN fake news. And that's not what we're talking about, really. What we're talking about are completely fabricated, fictional stories masquerading as news stories on essentially phony websites that have been picked up by mostly on social media and spread around all sorts of networks to misinform, deceive, confuse, entertain, and to make some people some money on the side just for kicks.
And there's a lot of it going on, and it has an impact for sure. No doubt anything we consume has some impact. But is it marginal, or is it something that's significant as far as pop culture, as far as public opinion, and as far as how votes are cast?
I would hesitate to call it marginal because I think, Jim, it's a serious symptom of a deep, troublesome problem in our society. There is and it's multi-leveled. There is a lack of trust in our institutions. And this not only includes the media, which has aided and abetted the credibility problem, but it also includes a lot of what social scientists, political scientists call mediated institutions. Well, what do I mean by that? I mean our parties, our political parties, our institutions and think tanks that have generally played a role for decades in formulating ideas, debating policy. We are a representative democracy. These institutions have a long history, the media, the political parties, the think tanks. There are others who have had a role in helping shape the nature of our leadership and the nature of how our democracy is run. And fake news, I think, is a symptom of the fact that we no longer trust these institutions. Media trust is mm-hmm. very low. Party affiliation has eroded dramatically. The think tanks, the ideas really about policy have not really played a role in this election and have generally eroded their influence overall, even between elections. As a consequence, we are much more trusting of our own peer networks. Mm-hmm. That has given rise to the ability of people to insert themselves with fakery and fraudulent news stories.
297-5633 or 877-217-5757. Those are your numbers for Lynn Apkar, the Wendell Gray Switzer Jr., Endowed Chair in Media Literacy at Louisiana State University at the Manship School. And if you'd like to send an email, it's talk@talklouisiana.org. Can you give an example? I know you have information about the biggest fake news stories in the presidential campaign cycle of last year, but what's a big example of how fake news was permeating the news cycle in 2016?
In 2016, I would say there were a number of stories that got into the ether, if you will, got into the discussion. A lot of mainstream media will tell you, the New York Times, the Wall Street Journal, even our local papers like the Advocate, insist that none of this permeated their websites or their print publications. And I have no reason to doubt that. I don't remember seeing a particularly fake news story in print here locally. But what were some of the stories that I heard about that got me interested in looking into them? The Pope had said something positive about Donald Trump. The Pope
had actually endorsed him.
When you looked at the story, it actually said that endorsed him. There was something about Hillary Clinton had Parkinson's disease. There were stories about Hillary Clinton had sold weapons to ISIS, either in her role as Secretary of State or in some other role. A lot of these fake news stories are very cleverly crafted to play to our biases. There was one story that was a marvel, such a marvel that it became somewhat of an investigation and a profile on the front page of the New York Times just last January, when the fake news phenomenon was really taking rise. It was a story that said that in an Ohio warehouse, there were boxes stuffed with ballots pre-marked for Hillary Clinton, and that they were discovered by a fellow in a warehouse. Why is this interesting? It plays to the biases of our networks, of our peer networks. At the time that the story first hit the internet last fall, there was all this talk about cheating, and Trump was saying that that the election was going to be stolen and rigged. Mm-hmm. This particular story played into the idea that Hillary Clinton could not win fair and square. So a young guy sat down and tapped out this story about boxes of ballots pre-marked in a warehouse discovered by a warehouseman, and found a picture that looked like something like a warehouse, and slapped it on a website that he essentially invented. And one thing led to another, and it took off.
And he made a lot of money.
He made a lot of money over about 20, 25 hours that the story was up there. There were fake ballots found in Ohio marked for Hillary Clinton. Only they weren't fake, according to the story. They were for real. I heard about that story, and I later discovered that, in fact, it was, of course, nonsense. Mm-hmm. But it's symptomatic of what I'm talking about. It's symptomatic of the idea that we are predisposed because of reinforcements in our social networks that Hillary Clinton cheats. Hillary Clinton doesn't tell all the truth or half truths. No politician really does. And that the election was going to be rigged, particularly in a tight battleground state like Ohio. Now, there you go.
Now you will have a forum on April 17th, as in a week from Monday, 6 p.m. at the Holiday Forum at LSU's Manship School. And this one will feature some of the people who are on the cutting edge of what you're just talking about, right?
It will. I'm really looking forward to this. The public is invited. It starts at 6 p.m., so on the LSU campus, parking is wide open at that hour. Everyone's welcome to come into the forum. We've got plenty of room. We will have a panel that includes my colleague Lance Porter, who has studied social media and a lot of this phenomenon that we talk about. We have a lab that analyzes trends and patterns in the way social media is used. But we're also going to have Cam Harris. Cameron Harris was the author of the fake news story that involved the Ohio ballots in the warehouse.
We're discussing fake news, and Lynn Apkar has done a study on this, and it's worthy of certainly public consumption. And come a week from Monday, there will be a forum on fake news at Louisiana State University, and we'll hear more from Lynn. There are a few other speakers that we didn't mention prior to the break, but a question from Cecile in Baton Rouge about how do you discern as a civilian, how do you determine what is fake and what is real?
Well, Cecile, that's going to take a little bit of work. And I think we have got to learn a little bit more about how to evaluate our media and our media sources. It's a good question, though. And we teach a number of different tools to take a look at stories and decide, you know, is this an independently, are the people who are suggesting that there are ballot boxes in an Ohio warehouse pre-marked for Hillary Clinton, are the people who are saying this, are they independent? Is there more than one source for this? Could we verify this? Does anybody else have this story? Is there some investigation by the Secretary of State or some other authority in Ohio that is looking into the question of whether these ballots are authentic? How authoritative are the people who are talking about this? Are they informed? Do they know anything about what they're talking about? Or are they just people who are quoting, well, if there's ballot boxes like that for Hillary Clinton, that must be a serious problem. That doesn't mean they know anything about it. And are they named? Are the sources named? This takes a little bit of time, and it takes a little bit of work. And, you know, we're all kind of short on that. And so we either decide we are going to trust an institution that does all this for us, like the Washington Post or the New York Times or the Advocate or the Times-Picayune website, NOLA.com. We either decide that they're doing their job and filtering the bad stuff out, or we have to decide for ourselves. And that's what media literacy is I won't say all about, but a large part of media literacy focuses on how to become much more discerning.
Now, there are those who will tag something as fake news if they don't agree with it on both sides of the political spectrum. And that's, of course, not fake news. And then there are journalists who make mistakes covering legitimate stories. That's not fake news either, is it?
No. Fake news by definition is already become a problem because everybody's using it for different purposes. And, you know, I think what we've got to basically get down to in a broad sense is what is truth? What is true? And I fear we are in a moment in our society where there is a war on truth. And I think we got there for a number of different reasons. Because of point of view journalism on cable, what I call mm-hmm. point of view journalism on cable, everybody has an opinion. I think that it has heated our debate. It certainly heated the 2016 election. And as a consequence, we have become far less trusting of mainstream media. You know, I've seen the bumper stickers over the years, CNN lies, I don't trust CNN. I know I was at the New York Times for 24 years. I knew a lot of people who disregarded the New York Times, don't believe it. I have neighbors in Louisiana who laugh at the fact that, you know, I have it delivered to my doorstep. And I read it online, of course. But that's okay. I understand that the diversity is what society is all about, but I think there has become a polarized anger, and that has contributed to the idea that, if I don't want to believe it or if I don't think it's fake, and that's where I think we're in kind of dangerous ground here because we have segmented our media into points of views. We shut out opinions we don't like. We don't consider that there are two, three, four sides. That there can be a mixture of opinion here, and it's not just the media. I think our political parties are part of this. I think it has basically been you have to be all in on the Democratic platform. You have to be all in on Democratic points of view. There's no nuance. You can't take exceptions. There's no, a la carte select views. And so it grew to the point, and we saw this years ago in the Reagan campaign, where union members became, you know, Democrats for Trump, Democrats mm-hmm. for Reagan. And I saw this in my years as a reporter in Detroit back in the 80s when Reagan embraced a lot of factory workers and grew a lot of support from them. And I've seen it again. And I think it's because the parties want everybody to be all in on their platform. And that's not going to happen anymore.
This term has been used often by President Trump. And he, of course, has tagged the New York Times and the Washington Post as enemies of the state. But yet when his health care plan went south a few weeks ago, the first reporters he called, without being prompted, the first reporters were from the Washington Post and the New York Times. So is there a disconnect in some ways about what is said and what is actually believed by the leader of the free world?
Well, I certainly think so, and I think people are going to have to learn how to filter out what the president says. When he called media the enemy, the press the enemy of the people, his aide, Bannon, basically told reporters to shut up and listen, that they are the opposition party. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think this is brutally unfortunate. And I think it doesn't recognize the role that institutions like the media have played. Now, I come from the ultimate mainstream media world. I come from, you know, I spent my 25 years in New York. I worked for two big New York-based institutions. So naturally, I understand I have a bias at this. But I also understand that the New York Times makes mistakes, that it is viewed as a left-of-center publication. But I don't tune it out. I read the Wall Street Journal, and I read the Wall Street Journal's editorial page, even though I know they're right-of-center, because I want to understand all the sides of an argument. And I think, frankly, that's the responsible position of most people in a democracy.
Julie in Hundred Oaks. Good morning, Julie. You're on Talk Louisiana. Hi, Julie.
Good morning. I'm really glad you're covering this topic, because I've been thinking for a little while that media literacy should be a required part of the high school curriculum. Do you agree?
I certainly do, yes.
And why do you believe so, Julie?
Well, that's when, I guess, I hate to say, you know, the formative years. I mean, not everyone's going to go on to college. And not everyone is going to necessarily pay attention to that topic in college. But, I mean, every citizen needs to understand how to vet information and, you know the difference between, a random unsubstantiated story and a, you know, suspicious fake website versus... It bothers me that our conventional mainstream media is under attack, and the fact that the New York Times, Washington Post, et cetera, they vet this information. They don't publish it unless they can verify it, and that's just completely discounted, like it has no value. And high school is a good time to reach people.
I would agree with that, and I have to say that in my students at LSU. There is a huge appetite for wanting to know more because they have not gotten this in their earlier years. We just opened up a website. We'll be publicizing it more to detect. It's a kind of how to detect fake news, how not to be faked out. Right now, it's just getting launched. It's on the Manship page, and we'll promote it some more. But it gives people tips on how to do it. It was built by students at LSU with the LSU Go Vote program.
225-297-5633, your number locally, if you'd like to talk to Lynn Apkar from the Manship School. We're talking fake news, and we'll hit him on a few other topics before we go. Phil in Jefferson Terrace. Hi, Phil. Good morning to you. You're on Talk Louisiana.
Good morning, Jen. Good morning, gentlemen.
Hi, Phil.
Yeah, I would wonder if, do you sense that the media or journalism in general has conscientiously up their standards? I mean, after the debacle of the lead up to the war in Iraq and then from this 2016 election, it seems to me that they're being a lot more, hard on asking a good question than.
I would say they're going to, I've seen evidence already, concrete steps that the New York Times has taken, the Washington Post has taken, and others have taken to, I think, get out of their own bubble. I noticed it immediately when I came to Louisiana almost two years ago and watched both the New York talk shows and started to look at coverage, that they didn't quite understand the power of a potential Trump candidacy and whether, in fact, he could actually win the nomination or, in fact, win the presidency. And I think there has been a realignment of resources at mainstream news sites to understand a vast amount of the country that were crying out for leadership. I actually think, you know, Trump's appeal spoke to a leadership vacuum and a decisiveness that they had not seen in Washington, and I don't think this was fully understood by the media.
225-297-5633. Thank you, Phil and Julie, for calling. We go to John on Seguin. John, you're on Talk Louisiana with Lynn Apkar of the Manship School. Hi, John.
Hey, all. How are you doing today? I just wanted to offer a quick comment. I work in the tech industry, and I think that the veracity of the mainstream media is heavily overstated, especially considering the fact that most of these articles, even when they are vetted, are not able to reach the highest levels of credibility because the people who are speaking about these various topics do not necessarily inherently understand them. And I've seen personally things that are completely false or misreported. And a great example is the Russian hacking, which, having read the CIA documents personally, appears to be nothing more than a phishing attack, a very unsophisticated, low-level attack. But this was never reported properly. So I think the whole idea of the fake news and the dichotomy that's being drawn between mainstream and alt news is essentially a misnomer. And that's all I wanted to say. Thank you.
Lynn, that gets to the point of mistakes, which are made by journalists. Those do not necessarily mean fake news. They mean the story was wrong. And then there's interpretation. John believes the Russian hacking story is a minor blip. Others believe it's a huge chasm that could bring down a president. The truth may be somewhere between, but we're going to hear this term fake news pegged on a lot of different things, aren't we?
We are. I mean, I would say to John that, yes, papers make mistakes. It's not clear to me exactly what this Russian question about interference in the election is. When I first heard about it and looked into it last fall, you know, I don't think it was designed to support any particular candidate, Clinton versus Trump. I think it was designed to confuse the electorate. And there's any number of reasons why the Kremlin was concerned about a Clinton presidency, but I don't necessarily think that they reached in to thwart it. I may well be wrong. I that was what I felt in the fall. What I now think is that this is worth looking at, but I don't think that the heated emotional comments and prejudgments by the president particularly are appropriate. I think he ought to put his Twitter handle away, and he ought to wait for it if in fact investigation is appropriate, and he's more or less caused it. If one is appropriate, I think we ought to just let the investigators and our process run its course. I hope it leads to something, and it is not a gigantic waste of time and resources. We should know more about this, and I don't necessarily think that it may be limited to a presidential year. It may, in fact, happen on a midterm year, and I think there's some evidence that it may have happened before. I think we need to get to the bottom of this, and that's what we do in a representative democracy. Otherwise, I think we don't trust it. We don't trust our own government. We don't trust our own processes. I admire John for reading all the material that he's read, but not everybody's going to do that. And that's where I think the mediated institutions like the press come in.
This issue, I have a feeling, is going to be around for a while, maybe forever. It doesn't seem like it's one of those things that's just going to go away overnight.
No, I agree with you, Jim. I think it gets back to what I was saying when we first sat down to talk. There is a complete distrust, almost total distrust, of various institutions in this country. And it's not just the press. It's our political leadership organizations. It's our parties and all the rest of it. And I think we have got to address this. We could face even bigger crises down the road if we don't understand, I think, the broader problem here. Truth is a victim. Our parties and leadership are a victim. Our debate about ideas and ways in which to fix our country and our society are at risk. And I think we need to address these. And how do we address them? I think we have to first identify the problems. And second, we have to start to begin to figure out how to build a better leadership network so that our country, is, as a representative democracy, is led better.
Well, quickly, the Holiday Forum on April 17th, we missed a few of the people who will be there a week from Monday at 6 o'clock at the LSU Journalism School. Who are some of the others we did not mention?
PolitiFact, which won a Pulitzer Prize in its work for doing exactly this before fake news was a term, trying to understand, you know, what people were saying was true or not true. We've invited iMedia Ethics. It's not just invited, they're coming. iMedia Ethics, which is, looks at just these mistakes made. There used to be a website called stinkyjournalism.com. They've changed their name, but they have not changed their purpose. They're looking at journalism that is faulty. Cam Harris, who I mentioned, who is a fake news author, is going to talk about how easy it was and what he's learned about fake news from being somebody who did it. Jarvis DeBerry, an op-ed columnist, will be our local media representative from NOLA.com. Jack Hamilton, who has studied the history of fakery and propaganda, will also be there. So we expect a really good panel of inquisition, debate, and it'll be open to the public 6, 2, 8, 9, whatever, on April 17th.
We're getting close to the break, but Paul in Opelousas, you'll be our final caller for Lynn Apkar. Hi, Paul.
Hi, Jim. Thank you. Just definition. You say fake news. I know a lot of people are getting their news from different entities, talk shows. I listen to a particular show, listen to a lot of NPR, and a particular guy, but I don't want to put his name on that, Mr. Rush. We're getting information from all over the place, cell phones, everything like that. Would you consider media, I mean a talk show, as media, even though we use it sometimes as that? Thank you very much.
Media? Talk shows or journalists, like Bill O'Reilly, is he a journalist?
I don't know if he's a journalist, but he's definitely part of this problem. He is a point of view. He's a point of view columnist, if you will, or commentator. Huge following. Maybe it's going to get less and less as if more and more advertisers flee his program, given his problems. But yes, I think he's a commentator. He has a point of view. He's one of dozens and dozens and dozens of people who do this. And I think, frankly, he has fed this polarization in our society. He's not the only one, but he appeals to people who want that particular point of view.
Well, thank you, Lynn Apkar. It's been a pleasure. And we'll return with the gentleman who runs the Preservation Hall in New Orleans, Ben Jaffe, after this time out on Talk Louisiana.